baby, come on in my kitchen. There's hard to be raining out
door. Come over here, kid, where's up? You never know, you might have to cook for 20 guys someday. You see, you start out with a little bit of oil. You fry some garlic.
It's
then you throw in some tomatoes, tomato paste, you fry it, you make sure it doesn't stick. You got it to a boil, you shove in all your sausage and your meatballs. Huh? And a little bit of wine. A little bit of sugar.
Delicious.
And that's my trick.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore.
Enough. I'm so sick and tired of hearing you people talk about food, food, food. That's all anybody ever talks about is prosciutto, cheese, and fava beans. I'm drowning here.
Jesus Christ, take it easy.
We're not even engaged yet.
When you're married, you'll understand the importance of fresh produce.
I eat with gusto, damn your bet, my country, tis of thee. I eat for social progress, I eat for victory.
Delicious.
Stay hungry, stay hungry, stay hungry.
You want some more?
Good evening and welcome to Mouthful, the wine country's most delicious hour. I'm Michelle Jordan. How are you doing this evening? It's the first show of a new year. We're talking about Portugal, or specifically Porto, also called Oporto if you're there, near the mouth of the River Douro. Across the river in Vila Nova de Gaia, port lodges rim the horizon, dozens of them filled with thousands of barrels and casks, aging the famous fortified wine called port. This is the center of port production, though to see the real action, the picking and crushing of the grapes, including the ancient technique of foot stomping that really does continue today, it is necessary to journey by car, train, or boat, and often a combination of all three, to see the vineyards and wineries where it all begins. Last fall, I had the opportunity to do just this. I visited the region and spent some time with Rupert Symington, whose family has been in the port business for generations, and today is the world's leading port producer. So, Rupert, tell me, where are we?
We're at Quinta dos Malverdes, which is an A-grade estate in the port wine region of northeast Portugal. Right here on the Douro Valley, we're looking at the river shining in the evening sun. Everything's looking great. We're in the middle of harvest, and we've had a little rain, but I think the quality is going to be good this year.
Now, there seems to be some controversy about what was the first wine region in the world, the first one charted, that sort of thing. And Douro is celebrating its 250th anniversary and has a legitimate claim to being the first of one category, right?
Well, I think the thing you need to claim to be the first demarcated region, you actually have to have proof that you actually demarcated it. And there was a gentleman who managed to demarcate in 1756. He actually walked around with a team of people identifying the limits of the port winemaking region, and he actually defined the limits as to where the best port could be made. And he said port can only be made within this limit. And he basically followed the schistous soil. Now, schist is a kind of sedimentary, powdery slate, and it sits on top of a granite bowl. So basically, he found out where the schist met the granite, and he actually laid out marker posts, giving us a legitimate claim to being the first demarcated region in the world.
Are there going to be special celebrations, special events for the 250th year?
There's a huge catalogue that's been published of events. I'm afraid I haven't looked very closely at it, but a lot of events up in the Douro, in the villages, celebrating locally. One highlight, which I thought was quite funny, was a Galician poet reciting nursery rhymes or children's stories to the school children in a particular village, which I thought was very appropriate, considering the Galicians were the guys who actually built all the terraces in the Douro, 250 years ago.
Interesting. So back to the estate where we are now. You're in the middle of harvest. Tell us a little bit about the history of this place.
Malverdes means bad ways. It was named after some rocks in the river. Before the river was dammed, there were sort of rapids and the port, the boats taking the port barrels downstream would encounter these rapids, and it was a particularly dangerous stretch of river. The rocks are still there, but they're underwater. The river's been flooded. But Quinta dos Mal village was named for these rocks. It was acquired by the Graham port business in about 1890, and the Graham family set about building a house here where they could stay when they were visiting the Douro. This coincided with the arrival of the railway line. It was built up from Oporto to just upstream of here in about 1887 or so. So Malvedros has been the home and the heart of the Graham's port business for over 100 years.
And when did the Symington family acquire it?
We got involved with Graham in 1970. We actually we didn't buy the estate when we bought Graham's, but in 1980 we bought the estate, and we extensively replanted it in about 1981. And today it's an estate which makes about, we measure our estates here in terms of pipes, which are literally barrels of port of production. This estate today makes about 250 pipes, making it a medium-sized estate. But it's a great terroir. It's an amazing stretch of river. The Douro River twists and turns on its way up from the coast to the Spanish border. And here we're in a gorge protected from the coastal rain by a series of high mountains called the Morang. And so we get a lowish rainfall, and the vines are growing under almost sort of desert conditions. We don't irrigate, so we're probably one of the driest regions in the world where vines are grown without the benefit of irrigation.
Is that one of the things that, it must be one of the things that counts for the character of port, is the concentration and the lack of irrigation?
Yeah, port grapes are very small. There are very few bunches per vine, very low yields, and this makes for a very concentrated wine. I always say that port is probably one of the most concentrated wines in terms of flavor, the thickness of the skin, and the juice that's extracted is full of color and flavor like no other wine in the world. One of the reasons for this is the drought. You know, if you starve a vine of water, it'll produce less fruit and more concentrated fruit.
For someone who doesn't know, what exactly is port? It's not it's not simply fermented grape juice. It's more complex than that.
Port today is a what we call a fortified wine. It's a wine that's had a neutral brandy spirit added to the fermenting grape juice. And what we do, we let about half the natural sugar of the grapes turn to alcohol naturally as part of the fermentation process. When half the sugar is turned to alcohol, we add this neutral white spirit called, we call it brandy, but it's a 77% alcohol by volume grappa or mark distilled from grapes. And we add that to the fermenting must. What the brandy does, it kills off the yeast and it stops the fermentation. Yeast is the catalyst that allows the sugar in grapes to turn to alcohol. If you kill off the yeast, you stop the fermentation permanently. So we add about one part brandy at 77% to about four parts fermenting juice at about 7%, and that comes to an average of about 19.5% of what we call the lotted finished port. Port, therefore, is a red wine where it's been artificially, the grape sugar has been artificially preserved, and the wine then has been allowed to, the brandy has been allowed to sort of knit into the wine, and then the wine has been aged thereafter for two or three years to make it sort of drinkable.
Is there a story to how this technique of making port first came about?
The story that I've heard is that port was once a dry red wine, just like any other dry red wine. The British, back in the 1600s and 1700s, acquired an enormous taste for port, or for red wines from northern Portugal. They had gone to war with France. They put a tax on French wine, and they needed to find alternative sources. So they went down the coast of Spain and Portugal in search of, you know, nicely drinking red and white wines, and that's the origin of sherry, Madeira, port, etc. The trouble was these wines were about one or two days further away in terms of sailing from Britain, whereas French wines could get there in really good condition. wines from Portugal and Spain tended to go off by the time they were got to England. So they had the idea of actually dashing them with brandy. So they'd splash some brandy into the wine, and this acted as a preservative. At some point, much later on, probably in the 1820s, it became popular to arrest the fermentation, to actually fortify during the fermentation and make the wine semi-sweet. And this is how we know port today. One of the most famous historical figures in the port trade was Joseph James Forrester, and he actually campaigned against fortification. He thought it was the most terrible malpractice. He equated it to the other malpractice of the time, which is adding elderberry juice, which seems a very strange thing to do to port, but apparently it added color to the weaker wines. And so he hated the idea of fortification, and it's curious now that he is remembered as one of the legendary figures of the trade, and he actually didn't like the sort of port that we drink today.
That's interesting. Originally, I assumed that all of the grapes were crushed by human power. Today, I know you make port in several different ways, including that traditional method.
Yeah, the Romans basically invented, or not invented, but they brought to Portugal the original method of making port, which was literally to fill a shallow stone tank about knee-deep in grapes, literally straight off the vine. And then people would jump into the tank in the evening and stomp for 3 hours until the grapes were all crushed. The grapes would then start to ferment, and over the next 24 hours or so, they would allow the fermentation to continue. And what happens with fermentation is that gas is released, the skins and pips float to the surface of the tank, and the juice is left below. So what you want to do to get the color out of the skins is to plunge them. So they use these special sticks called macacos, which actually literally means monkey, and people would plunge the cap into the juice to try and get all the color out of the skins. The one thing about port fermentation, it's a very short period in which you can get all the color out of the skins. Port is very thick-skinned, the grape, and you've got half the sugar ferments into alcohol in just 36 hours. So you've got an amazingly short time to get all that color out of the skins. Whereas with table wine, you can actually leave the wine on the skins soaking for up to a week. You can't do that with port because we actually run it off the skins after 36 hours. So foot treading was a very good way of getting all that color by friction out of the skins. The action of the human foot rubbing against the stone at the bottom of the tank was absolutely perfect for extracting color in the Douro. And this method, even though the Romans are long gone, this method actually remained the principal method for making wine in the Douro until probably the 1960s. There was no electricity in most of the Douro, so there was no other mechanical means really to make port except by foot treading.
Could you explain today how it's done, who it is who does it, how long they do it, when they do it, that sort of thing?
Well, treading is done now really only in a sort of a handful of farms which either have no alternative or the owners of the farms elect to do it because they believe it makes fantastic quality port. So at Quinta do Vesúvio, for instance, one of my family properties, we still ferment 100% of the port of the estate by foot treading. Now, this is expensive. You've got a man or a woman treading for 3 hours, and they each get paid about 16 euros. That's about $22 for 3 hours' work. And there may be up to 50 of them in a tank. And then you've got the trouble of having to punch the cap down. You've then got to run it off. You've got then to fortify it. You've got to get it into the tank, all without sophisticated modern methods. And I say we only do this at Vesúvio because we believe it's the right way to make absolute top-quality port. There are many cheaper alternatives to making port, but this is obviously the historic one that's been used for hundreds of years.
It was having what seems like a foreman counting out right, left, as well as having music traditional to the foot treading?
Yeah, there's a sort of, the treading's divided into two tempos, if you like. There's 2 hours where the treaders they get into lines, they link arms, and they walk across the lagar backwards and forwards, very, very sort of in almost military style to the beat of a man calls time, and he calls left, right, left, right. And then after 2 hours, he calls what's called the Libertad, the Liberty, and often musicians arrive, and it becomes a big party in the lagar, and which Michelle starred last night in her by not jumping in rather than by jumping in. But it's actually a great party, a great ceremony, and a wonderful historical tradition. Practically, it's getting very difficult to find people to do it. These estates, a lot of them are very remote. The people who do it are the people who've been picking all day. And somewhere like Vesuvi, they do it because they appreciate the extra money, and there's nowhere else to go at the end of the day. But at estates where there have been, where there's a village nearby, it's very hard to get treaders nowadays. So I think the days of treading are numbered.
What replaces treading?
There are various methods that the port trade has come up with, including one called auto-vinification. This is a wonderful technique invented by a North African gentleman, which basically uses the pressure of the fermenting, the gas released by the fermenting juice, to actually drive a pumping over system. This allows the cap or the skins and pips to be sprayed constantly with the juice. It doesn't involve any external power. You know, it's a mechanical method, but driven by the gas from fermentation rather than by any other method. So a very clever, innovative system that is probably one of the most widely used in the Douro today. This system was brought in from the 1960s onwards, and in fact, one of my family companies, Dow's, was one of the first to actually put this in a serious way. Dow's removed its lagars at Quinta-Pomfing and put in this new technology, which allowed basically for much more efficient temperature control. One of the disadvantages of lagars, traditional treading, is that you can't control the temperature. It can get over. You can overheat a lagar and you can spoil the wine. With auto-vinification, you can actually cool and heat the must according to the temperature of the year, and it's a much more regulated process.
So less margin of error. Are you giving up anything in doing it that way?
One of the disadvantages of auto-vinification is that you've got a relatively tall and narrow tank, and that means you've got less surface area of skins in contact with the juice. If you imagine a lagar being a large tank, which is about 25 foot square, there's lots of surface area in contact with the juice, which is only knee deep. Whereas these are much taller, deeper tanks. Obviously, you can build auto-vinificators wider and lower, and we've done that. But the results we've always felt over the years since the 60s, the wines that we've managed to make by foot treading in lagars it's always been the best method for our very best wines. So although it was an antiquated method, it was still considered, a fantastic method of doing it. More recently, in fact, 98, our winemaking team got together, and the holy grail of port making is to come up with a system which accurately replicates foot treading, but using modern mechanical methods. And we've come up with a fantastic machine, which we call the robotic lagar. This is a vessel which copies the approximate dimensions of a stone treading tank, but it's built out of stainless steel. It's double jacketed, so water can flow hot or cold through the outside of the tank, thereby keeping the temperature of the must constant at the right 28 degrees centigrade, or whatever you choose. And then it has four plates that almost replicate the lines of feet, which basically walk across the tank, pushing the skins down to the bottom of the tank. It's even got silicon toes, and those toes apply the same pressure as the human foot to the bottom of the tank, thereby creating the friction, breaking up the skins, and releasing the color and flavor into the juice. So this system is very flexible. These things don't get tired, they don't get paid, they don't drink. They appreciate music, but they are a fantastic departure from the auto vinification, which is still a great method and great for larger volume wines. But these robotic lagars are fantastic when applied to the relatively small productions we're getting of absolutely superb grapes from our top estates. So we've installed this technology now at Graham's Malvedos, Dow's, Signorie Beira, Waugh's Cavadinha Winery, and we're taking the old wineries and converting them, keeping a lot of the character of the old winery, but putting in these new machines alongside some of the traditional treading tanks. And the results have been staggering. I mean, Graham's in 2000, it was the first year we introduced these things at Malvedos, and the Graham 2000 wines, we had a higher proportion of Malvedos in the final blend that year just because we had such fantastic results from the estate wine.
Now, when after the short fermentation and the fortification of the wine, and it's drained off the skins, the aging process begins. And that pretty much seems that's how you make port, and all the rest is in the aging, is that right?
We have a split industry. We make the wine up in the Douro, and one of the problems at the harvest is finding where to put all the wines that we're fermenting. So we keep the wines up here for about anything from 6 months to 9 months, and then we load them down by truck about 60, 70 miles to Oporto. Now, this is a city on the coast where traditionally the port merchants had their headquarters, and we still have our headquarters in Porto. The reason they were based down there is that port was considered much better if it was aged on the coast. The Douro has very extremes of high and low temperatures, and it's not an ideal place for aging wine. So the early merchants built these big warehouses in Vila Nova de Gaia, which is opposite the city of Oporto, on the coast of northern Portugal, actually at the mouth of the Douro River. They would traditionally float the barrels down on these barges or these port wine boats down on the current to Oporto, and then unload them at Vila Nova de Gaia, and then roll them up the hill or take them up on bullock carts to these big lodges. And if you visit Vila Nova de Gaia today, the lodges still exist. That's where our main offices are. And we still believe that wines are best off aging in Gaia. So once we've made the wines at the harvest, we have to do a sort of a sorting process. We have to decide how good the wine is, divided into what we call lots, and then those lots will either be left in large barrels for bottling within 2 or 3 years, or large sort of oak vats for bottling in 2 or 3 years. Other wines will go into smaller barrels of about 535 litres, and those wines are what we call old, destined for old tawnies. They'll actually stay in the barrel for 10 or 20 years, slowly aging. Other wines are bottled. Our best selection are bottled after just 1.5 to 2 years as vintage port, and these are wines that go into bottle much sooner. They're bottled without any fining or filtration, and they're allowed to mature very slowly in bottle bins. So we actually put the cork in the bottle, we put it into a bin, and we just leave it there until it's ready. Wines that mature in bottle mature very differently from the wines that mature in barrel. When you put a wine into bottle and you put the cork in, it doesn't get any more air. So it's what we call a reductive maturation. The wine matures slowly, much as a table wine does, and it creates a sediment, and the wine eventually, when it's ready for drinking and opened, it will need decanting. The other kind of aging in barrel, the wine sees a lot of oxygen. The barrel allows the wine literally to breathe through the pores in the barrel, and the wine becomes what we call a tawny. It loses its fruit, it loses a lot of its purple color, and it takes on a totally different flavor and taste profile. So it becomes almost nutty, honey-like, caramel-like, and it literally goes brown. The word tawny means brown. So these are the two fundamental ways of aging port, one in the bottle, the other in the barrel.
What role does blending and blenders have in the production of port?
Well, a traditional port shipper would have a huge library of wines in barrel from its different properties, it's from its different grape varieties, and wines of different qualities made at the harvest, and the wines of different ages. And one of the arts of the port trade is blending, which literally you want to be able, if you have a house blend like, for instance, Graham's Six Grapes, you want to be able to replicate that blend each year, although you're using up different raw materials. So the blending team are a specialized team of people who they get basically last year's six grapes, put it on the bench, and they'll try and copy it as accurately as possible using new wines. And this isn't easy, particularly when you're talking about a 20-year tawny. You've got to get a 20-year-old tawny, the last blend, and you've got to add little bits, and they literally have a almost like a test tube measuring cylinder where they pour, you know, one part of the X wine and two parts of Y wine and three parts of Z wine, and they blend them together on the bench to produce exactly the same flavor and taste as the previous lot of the same wine. And then they replicate the blending process using whole tanks. So they'll basically make it on the bench, and then they'll actually choose two barrels of this and three barrels of that and one barrel of this in order to make the final blend as closely as possible to the previous blend.
How long has your family been in the port business?
My great-grandfather got here in 1882 from Scotland, and he joined the port business in about 1884. My grandfather grew up, he was born in a port, he grew up in the port business. My father, likewise, and I grew up sort of with the port business around me. My great-grandfather actually married a lady whose own family had roots in the port trade going back to the late 1600s. So I think we can say quite happily that we have been in the port trade by one of our bloodlines for an awfully long time. But we're very proud of our tradition. We're a very close family. I work with five of my cousins in this business, and we all divide up the responsibilities. We're all very hands-on. We like running our business hands-on rather than sort of letting other people run it for us. And I'm up here at the Harvest, and I've seen no less than three of my cousins today passing either on the road or on the river or in the winery. We're all up here sort of either with our customers or our friends or our winemaking teams, looking after our harvest and making sure that, you know, we can perpetuate the Symington family estate's quality for yet another year.
And how many, I'm not sure the right way to ask this question, how many holdings, how many individual wineries are under the Symington umbrella?
We have two major wineries that where we receive farmers' grapes. For years we've been working with farmers. The Dour is a huge region, and as much as I'd love to say that we all owned all our own vineyards, we don't. It's a big region, and it's very traditional in the Douro to buy and support families of farmers. So a lot of farmers who we've been working with for two generations, and we have two wineries to receive their grapes before the harvest. We go and talk to our farmers and work out, you know, prices and what we're going to, how many grapes they're going to deliver, etc. And then we have, further to those two main wineries, we have another four micro wineries where we produce much smaller quantities of really vintage port quality wine from single estates. For instance, here at Malverde, we've got a winery that just does Malverde production. At Senhor de Ribeira, we've got a small winery that does the Senhor de Ribeira production, and then about three or four neighboring estates belonging to the family, and another couple of farms belonging to farmers, local farmers. So we're really vinifying very small quantities. We believe that's the way to get real quality, is to keep the lots separate early on and then make tiny productions, and then worry about blending only after the harvest, because during the harvest there's so much going on, it's hard to actually think about how to classify wine. So we prefer to make the port, put it away in a tank, a smaller tank as possible, and then think about it, you know, 6 months later when we've got a bit of the calm has returned to the Douro.
For somebody who's brand new to port, doesn't necessarily understand it, when should you drink it, and what are the sorts of things that you might want to eat at the same time?
Well, port is a bit of a split product. Half the world seems to drink it as an aperitif, the French, the Belgians, the Spaniards. And the other half of the world drinks it as a digestif after dinner, which, like the Scandinavians, the Brits, the Canadians, and those wonderful people in the U.S. The tendency has been for the quality ports to be consumed after dinner, and today Britain remains the largest market for what we call premium ports. Those are the sort of the better quality ports. The second biggest market is the U.S., and the third biggest is Canada. And in the traditional after-dinner port markets, my favorite thing to enjoy with port is cheese. Personally, I think cheese, either Stilton or a good cheddar, or with a tawny port, a nice camembert or reblochon or something from France, goes fantastically with an old tawny. The occasion for port, certainly in the northern markets, is always after dinner, and normally after the dessert. I find desserts in port, unless it's something like a creme brulee with 20-year-old, it's better not to try something too sweet at the same time as a port, because you'll have, you know, too much sugar going on. The wine will be battling the dessert. So I think just on its own, after dinner is a wonderful time to drink port. Traditionally, people in the UK drank port around Christmas time. It was a sort of a winter drink. But actually, tawny port, like a 10-year-old tawny, is delicious on a summer's day, lightly chilled. That's how we enjoy it here through the summer. You'd think it would be odd to be drinking a sort of a heavy fortified wine on a summer's day, but actually it's delicious. It's very fine and very sort of very unheavy in terms of you know, enjoying it on a hot day. So the other thing to enjoy with port is nuts. Wonderful, you know, walnuts or something go brilliantly with vintage port. And you can be a bit more experimental. You can try chocolate with some of the richer ruby ports, like Six Grapes or Dow's Trademark, go great with dark chocolate. Again, nothing too sweet, and preferably not a milk chocolate. I think a dark. I'm sure you've had those chocolates that are almost non-sweet chocolates. Mm-hmm. Absolutely delicious with port.
This is the 06 harvest, a significant harvest for the Douro, since it's the 250th anniversary. When will we start to see the very first 06 vintage in the U.S. market?
Well, we'll have to assess the quality of the vintage. We have had some rain. We had a sort of a wave of heat a couple of weeks ago, which dried up a lot of the grapes. All that said, which those things are not ideal, but there have been some fantastic colors in the musts. We look for, when the lagars are fermented, we look for a dark purple color. Yesterday up at Sierra de Ribera, we saw the most amazing colors coming from the Tarriga Nacional Varietal that was fermenting there. And if everything goes well, I think we'll have something to bottle of single quinta quality. A single quinta vintage port should be produced from each of the estates this year, unless something goes horribly wrong. It's too early to say whether we'll see a vintage, but we'll certainly see in due course something from the 06 harvest coming out and being bottled in about 18 months, 20 months' time. We're now in September, so we're talking February, March 08 that we'll begin to see some 06 wines. There certainly will be some LBV, late bottle vintage, is something that is produced almost every year. It's not as sensitive to the year as classic vintage port. And I'm absolutely sure that in 4 years' time, we will have some 06 LBV appearing on the shelf. And that should be interesting to look back and reflect this these few days in the Douro and how it might have been different if the weather had been different.
Well, I'm going to have to come back because I'm going to have to get into step into the grapes the next time that I'm here. I'm glad that I got the sound. It's really wonderful, but I want my feet in there, so I'm going to have to make another visit. In the meantime, I'd like to say really thank you for this opportunity. It's quite a remarkable place, the Douro, somewhere I don't expect I would have come otherwise. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Michelle.
And thanks for being on Mouthful.
Great. Thank you very much indeed.
Family business. You bumped into Charles and Peter, who were in the middle of working in the winery down there. You met Johnny, who's now in Ireland selling port. You didn't meet Dominic, my younger brother, who's today in Denmark selling pork, and you've met Rupert and I. If anybody tells you a family business, tell me where there's six members of the family who are full-time working, and I mean working, not just turning up from time to time to see how things are going on. We work in this business. We make our wines, and we get out and sell our wines, and we're very proud of them. So now we've got to go and actually do some work. What I would like to say is I think this is a very magical place, Don Antonio, and when you walk along to the winery now, just there's very few lights in the valley here. You walk along there and you'll hear the capataz calling time on the roga. And he'll be saying left, right, one, two, left, right. And he's been doing that for 2 hours. Mm. That sound is exactly what you would have heard 150 years ago when the woman who built this property walked along after dinner to that same place. There are a couple of electric light bulbs on the wall. That is the only difference. So I think you should raise your glasses to Don Antonio. Thank you very much.
Chama, eu fico triste. Quando o fado reclama a minha dor.
Several hundred miles south of Porto, off the coast of Morocco, is Madeira, an island discovered by Portuguese explorers in the early 1400s. Today, this beautiful island is a popular resort, and it's also the home of Madeira, a fortified wine that was in itself really discovered rather than simply made. As wines from Europe made the journey south, near the equator, they were transformed by heat. In the process, people discovered that it was really delicious, and now that process is reproduced in the island's many wineries. Although Madeira is not as widely known as Port, it is as intimately connected with the region's history as Port is, and it is served in a similar way, as an aperitif or an after-dinner drink. I wasn't able to interview anyone while I was on the island. Time was short and accents were really challenging, but I found Madeira to be absolutely delicious. We even drank some from the 1800s. I caught up with Bill Traverso in Santa Rosa to ask him about the selections of both Madeira and Port at his family's store. Bill, welcome to Mouthful.
Oh, nice seeing you again, Michelle. I hope you had a nice holiday period.
Oh, yeah, and you too, I assume.
Thank you. Yeah, we did. Very busy.
Things are a little calmer now at Traverso, so that the holidays are over.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, tell me, I went to Portugal a few months ago and tasted tremendous diversity, and I confess, I don't know a whole lot about port. So if I were to come in here as a novice looking to buy something, what sort of advice would you have for me?
Well, usually I ask the customer, what style of port would they be interested in, or if they were giving it as a gift, what type of port that individual receiving it would like. You have ports that are very big, very chewy, ports that you can age. They're late bottled vintage ports that are ready to go, that have had some time in cask. But they're a little bigger. Then you have your tawny ports, which are a lot lighter. They've spent a lot of time in wood and matured in casks for 10 years, for 20 years on average. And they tend to be a bit lighter. So first we have to find out from the customer what style that they really liked and go from there. And once we identify their style, we offer some suggestions. Normally, the best alternative to the two styles is, for me, I think, for the customer, is maybe a character port where they're aged 3 or 4 years blended together. That works really well. Then we move them up to, let's say, late bottled vintage ports, which we have a little bit more body to the port. And then if someone wants to have something a little lighter, obviously we go to the matured in cask ports.
You have a nice box set here of the Quinta do Vesuvio, which is one of the places that still does the foot stomping to produce theirs. Could you tell me some about this box set?
Yes, that's one of our favorite ports. We order this port about 6 months before release date. It's a pre-order type of item. Generally, these ports are, we find, from vintage to vintage to be really very outstanding, very, what should I say, very traditional in their methods, like you mentioned, where they do a lot of the foot stomping. They age very, very well. This is a port that you can lay down for 10, 20 years and have something truly outstanding after that period of time. You know, there are some people that do enjoy just a younger type of port, so this is, again, one of those ports that you could open up and certainly enjoy if you like that style where you're getting a lot of big forward fruit, fairly big in the mouth, a lot of fruit on the palate type of thing. But it will age for a long period of time.
And what comes in? It's a nice-looking box. It has, what, three bottles in it?
It has six. It comes in six bottle boxes, and it is it's a beautiful package. We sell them either in six packs or individually.
And what are the different bottles? Is it like buying half a case of wine? It's all the same, or are there different different vintages, different styles in there?
No, it's all one vintage, and again, you can buy it individually or buy it in a six pack, and it presents itself very well being in this beautiful wooden box, and it even comes with a little ceramic hanger that you can put in your cellar, which indicates the port. It's like you hang it off the neck of the bottle, and it can identify the port in your rack if you lay your bottles down in a beautiful wine cellar that has areas for laying wines down,
or maybe from your windshield, if you, or from you know your rear view window,
right, exactly.
If you don't have a cellar. Tell me about some of the other ports. Do you have? Do you actually drink port yourself?
Oh yeah, I enjoy port, especially on winter months when the weather is cold. It seems to lend itself to drinking port. Although some of the lighter tawny ports, it can be enjoyed in warmer weather. Also, we do some white port. There are a few producers that do white port, and they're great summer drinks. You can chill them. They're not quite as sweet as, and in some cases, they are dry. And you would serve that as almost like an aperitif before your meals in the summer.
Could you describe a little bit what the taste of white port is?
White port is, I would say, it was a little bit similar to a nice, refreshing white wine that we have, you know, in here in California, or some European whites. They're lighter, obviously, than the, and not as much wood, so you're not getting a lot of that wood flavors that you would get from traditional ports. Again, they're lighter. And in some cases, dry, very refreshing type of wine.
Now, you mentioned that you like drinking port in the winter months and the cold months. Does port in general, when it comes to what your customers want, does it have that sort of season?
Yeah, it is very seasonal. Yeah, when you get into warmer months, people do not think about port. Certainly, you know, it's a the mindset of the individuals that buy these wonderful ports from all over the world, not only Portugal, but from California and Australia, they think of them as a cold weather type of beverage, after dinner, sitting by the fire type of drink.
About how many ports do you carry? About how many, I don't know if brand is the right word, labels, that sort of thing, from Portugal? Because we're going to talk about California ports too.
Well, I never did really go by and count these things, but you know, as far as labels on the shelf, I would say we carry, you know, a good 30 so different ports from Portugal. And, you know, it varies as the season increases. Starting in October, we start to have a bigger supply. And, of course, as the holidays wind itself down, our inventory goes down also. So, but in general, we carry a good 30 different brands that the customer can choose from.
Now, let's talk about the California ports, because let's make a comparison. Champagne, the word, refers to a region in France. And if I understand it correctly, technically what we make in California isn't champagne. We make sparkling wine with the champagne method. Mm-hmm. Are there parallels with port in California, or do we just call it port?
Well, I think California is a more fruit-driven type of producer, and the consumer is looking for this big, ripe, forward fruit. And I would say that California ports tend to go to that style. They do use traditional port varieties, and in some cases they'll blend in some traditional California varieties, like Zinfandel. There is some producers that do the traditional port varieties, add a little bit of Zin, maybe they'll add some Petit Sirah. Also, you'll find that in California, also they'll do straight ports made from Petit Sirah, made from Zinfandel, made from Cabernet. Now we're seeing a few more producers, actually, that are doing strictly traditional port varieties. There's the Bello in Napa Valley that does traditional port varieties. Pedroncelli, which won a gold medal at the Harvest Fair, used traditional port varieties in his port that won a gold medal about 2 years ago at the Harvest Fair. So, you know, we're finding a little bit of both, mixing the old world varietals with some of the new world varietals.
Do you think California has really succeeded in capturing, what would you say, the character or quality of traditional port?
Yeah, I think they have. Again, in California and other parts of Oregon, where they do a little bit, I think, in Washington, the winemakers there are very, want to be as good as what the Europeans are doing, what the Portuguese are doing, in this case, to produce a product that will approximate that of what they're doing in Portugal, or even go beyond that and try to refine it and make something even, which they think is even better, using new techniques. We're very studious about our winemaking, I think, in California, and want to go beyond what traditional methods are, incorporating some of the new winemaking techniques to the traditional techniques, in this case, Portugal.
Not a lot of foot stomping, though. Let's talk a little bit, too, about Madeira. I know that I have been coming to Traversos and buying Madeira, rainwater Madeira, because it's such a great thing to cook with. But I visited the island of Madeira and was really quite taken with it. And there's an interesting story about how Madeira is made. But let's talk about the brands that you have.
Well, yeah, we have a couple brands. It's not obviously as popular as ports are, but there is a little bit more interest in Madeira. In the past, it was strictly, as you mentioned before, the rainwater was a product that everyone seemed to know about, because a lot of the old recipes required that you, if you were going to make something with Madeira, it would be generally a medium, which they call rainwater. To a lot of people.
And medium means medium dry, so
correct.
Not
yeah,
really
correct.
Sweet
no, exactly.
And not totally dry.
Exactly. It's in between. It's, I would say it leans a little bit more to the drier side, but it does have that sweetness to it. Now we're seeing, as our wine drinking population becomes more knowledgeable, they're willing to explore or go into the other types of Madeira that are produced, going to the Malmsey, the sweeter side, going even to the dry, to the Seychelles, which is the driest of the Madeiras. And using them as an aperitif, using the Malmsey's now as another alternative, let's say, to an after-dinner beverage. Instead of doing port, they will do a nice 10-year-old Malmsey Madeira or something of that nature. But again, the most popular is the rainwater because, it's a product that you'll see in old traditional recipes. I'm sure you know that.
Okay, well, Bill, my last question, this time I always have questions for you, is when it comes to aperitif-type drinks overall or after dinner, before dinner, where would you say Port and Madeira are in the overall popularity? Are there other wines we should think about in that same category?
Well, of course, in that same category, you obviously have sherry, and sherry now is starting to become a little bit more popular. It kind of seems to go in cycles, but I would say 30, 40 years ago, sherry was fairly popular. People understood, brands such as Harvey's Bristol Cream and Dry Sack, and then it kind of fell out of popularity. But now we're seeing a little, again, more interest in it because as the wine consumer becomes more knowledgeable and explores different regions and knows how those products are used, they're willing to try them, and then I think they are very pleasantly surprised about some of these other products that were very traditional in the past, and now they're becoming more in the consciousness of the wine-drinking consumer. Again, sherries run the gamut from very sweet to very, very dry, and you can use them, as we were talking about with Madeira and Port, as an aperitif, as a dessert wine, something that calls for cooking. You would go into the kind of the medium variety. So you got the whole gamut there also, and it's just people are now willing to try them.
Well, thank you very much for your time. One last thing. Could you describe, for people who might not know exactly where Traversas is and what your hours are, please?
Yes. We're in downtown Santa Rosa, across from the mall on the Sears end. That's the Santa Rosa Mall. Right off of the freeway, one block, we're at 3rd and B Street. So you just take the downtown Santa Rosa exit, and depending if you're coming from the south, you turn right and go underneath the shopping center, and we're there. And if you're coming from the north, you take the downtown Santa Rosa exit and go to 3rd and turn left and come up. But with all this freeway business going on, that may change from week to week.
And you're open every day except Sunday?
Correct. And we're open from 9:30 to 5:30.
Thanks so much. I hope you have a great 07.
Thank you. The same to you, Michelle.
Well, that's the end of another tasty episode of Mouthful, the wine country's most delicious hour. Have a great week. Take care of yourselves and each other, and meet me back here next Sunday at 7 for another episode of Mouthful.
Mouthful is produced and hosted by Michelle Anna Jordan. Lawrence Alberti is Mouthful's engineer. For more information about Mouthful, send an email to mouthful@michelleannajordan.com. That's Michelle with one L. You can also download Mouthful's free podcast from krcb.org or from iTunes. Dinner, dinner,